Good afternoon. Welcome to the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. Of course, we are broadcasting from the Nebraska State FFA Convention, number 96. Today is the last day. It'll be wrapping up later this afternoon. Well, these markets definitely have made Friday for an interesting type of market trade. We're going to talk about all these influences and the pushes we've seen, the lows that we've seen set. And of course, we do know that HPAI continues to be talked about as well. Joining us today is Sean Hackett with Hackett Financial Advisors. And Sean, I know that geopolitical, I was doing some of that reading about the Russia and the investigations they were doing into those cargoes, and they get the phytosanitary and then they got drone issues. There's just a lot happening right there, right now, that's having an effect on what we see in this market trade.
Yeah, I think the market's getting uneasy. We have the Vladimir Putin is going to be inaugurated again here on May 7th. It just seems that we're getting greater and greater instability. We're seeing precious metals breaking out, gold making new all-time highs, crude oil pressing new highs for the year. Wheat starting to react to the upside. These are all geopolitical commodities that are saying, you know, we might be entering a different environment for commodities, where forces in geopolitics might drive these markets more so than our typical, you know, weather and currency that we've been dealing with for the better part of the last 6 months.
So what was the reason behind this cargo that they are the two cargoes they kind of held back a little bit? I guess I have not been able to find real concrete information.
But I also think that's the problem, right? No one really knows for sure exactly what's happening, other than we're just seeing more and more evidence that the instability is getting closer to where the supplies are coming from. And we know when that really took place in early 22, what happened to markets. And I think the market is just getting uncomfortable that in an election year for the U.S., I think people are thinking that these leaders are seeing an opportunity to create, you know, greater geopolitical unrest when they think the U.S. is in a weakened position.
So where do we go from here? I mean, how did you see this affecting the way the wheat market traded?
Well, I mean, wheat, you know, certainly given how prolific Russia is for producing and exporting wheat, you know, clearly wheat is a geopolitical commodity. And so we're, you know, if you just look at the rally we've seen in the last week, really pretty impressive. It's the first really strong geopolitical rally we've had in quite some time. And once again, it dovetails with what we're seeing in crude oil, with gold, and even with copper, you know, breaking out to highs for the year. So I think there's a theme going on here that, and of course, what's good for wheat, you know, certainly wouldn't be hurt for the grain markets and getting some more of these speculators to rethink their short positions.
Well, and I know early this week we kicked off the year with our weekly crop progress reports that are released. And I know that on Monday's numbers, wheat was looking pretty good to start out with such a high percentage, what, 56% good to excellent in the state of Kansas. So hopefully we can just say there's no place to go but up here in the U.S. for this crop.
You know, it's always what the market's expecting versus what it gets. I mean, I think most people were expecting really good ratings relative to last year. Remember, wheat is in the mid fives, down from 12 to 14. So, you know, we're dealing with a market that has very, very much traded most every single bearish fundamental out there, including the better ratings here for the U.S. Given that the wheat market did not react negatively to that number, says to me, as you said, you know, maybe so, you know, when bad news no longer moves the market down, oftentimes that's how you make a bottom in the market.
What's your thought and takeaway of the ethanol at this point? I know the margins have remained kind of range bound. They're really waiting for this summer driving season to really hit.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you know, we need to start getting some gasoline demand going. Clearly, crude oil and energy is at a higher level, and if we can get some demand coming in, you know, I think the ethanol story is going to be supportive. You know, obviously it'd be nice if we got some policies to expand ethanol even further, but it just seems like in an election year, you know, that process is very, very slow, and it doesn't look like the politicians want to move the ball forward until after the elections. But at least with what we know or what we have going now, I think that ethanol is going to be a positive spot here for corn going into the spring.
And this just seems to be a little U.S. political pawn going on right now for that.
For sure. Absolutely.
What are your thoughts on the soybean trade? I mean, they have, I mean, today they've got some decent numbers going on, but there has been a struggle with them for this week.
You know, I think the issue for soybeans is, you know, we're looking for more consistent demand coming out of China for U.S. soybeans. It looks like when we're starting to, you know, bring the numbers down into South America, even though their yields are way off, it does look like they snuck quite a few extra acres in for soybeans, and that's going to make the numbers a little less negative than they could have been. And it just keeps the market guessing as to how much new business or increase in business we can get from China if Brazil is still going to be a big exporter of soybeans. Now, corn's completely opposite. The very fact that we planted more soy means we planted less corn, and it does look like the yields are going to be way off. You know, we could be down, you know, in excess of 20% on the corn crop. I think right now, if I'm looking at where the fundamental levers are, it looks to me like wheat and corn really have some good bullish stories. I'm still searching for what that catalyst is right now for soybeans without getting clear U.S. Chinese demand.
And of course, all that is subject to change with what the weather does, what geopolitical does. So it makes it for a very interesting ride for these commodities.
Absolutely. I think, you know, if we're just looking at, I think there's over 60 countries that have elections this year. You know, it's going to be a wild situation with all these governments and all these levers being pulled and how governments react. So I think we definitely need to be on our toes. I mean, look what happened yesterday. The stock, the Dow Jones lost 500 points plus in like 5 minutes on Netanyahu in Israel saying, you know, that they're not going to agree to a ceasefire.
More is coming up as we get ready for the second half. It is the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network.
Channel and Fontenelle have joined forces to bring you a product lineup that's second to none. Here's Channel Seed Pro Steve Bristol from Bristol Ag at Ravenna.
You know, we have the best and most complete seed portfolio in the corn and soybean industry, and it just got better. No seed company has a hybrid built specifically for each field's individual demands other than Channel.
For more, talk to your local seed professional or go to channel.com. Always read and follow label directions, IRM, green marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back once again to the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. Our conversation continues with Sean Hackett with Hackett Financial Advisors. And I'd like to rewind folks here, Sean, to the last time you were on the Nebraska Soybean Board Weekly Market Roundup with us. And we were talking weather. And you brought up the fact that, you know, we could still possibly get some frost late April into the month of March.
Yeah, I mean, the cycles that we follow, you know, whether it's, you know, El Nino to La Nina, you know, warm Atlantic Ocean, cold North Pacific. I mean, there's a lot of factors that we look at. The last time we had this combination of cycles was 2017, which was really the last time we had a May frost. If you look at what happened to, let's say, winter wheat, KC winter wheat, during that period from May into June, we put over a dollar on the market post-frost. So, you know, these can be big market movers, disruptors. And we're expecting a very, very warm April. We're expecting very rapid planting for corn and soybeans. We think we could have potentially record number of planted acres in the ground with a really realistic elevated chance for a frost in May. It really sets up for the potential for a major catalyst, you know, to for the grain markets to have a weather-related catalyst to the upside. And certainly that would be a time for producers to look for opportunities to potentially cash sell if that scenario were to play out, but definitely something to keep on your radar screen because we think there's a really strong elevated chance for that to happen this year like it did in 2017.
All right. It's good things to keep in mind as we get this crop in the ground. Let's switch gears a little bit, start to go over to the livestock side. This dairy industry has been dealing with HPAI, and it's had a lot of talk in the marketplace as of yet.
Yeah, I mean, we're still in the discovery phase, the what-if phase. And you know, and really what we're looking for is what's the USDA going to require? You know, what's the protocol going to be? Because we have to develop some kind of a strategy of how do we handle dairy cows that get sick? Do we quarantine them? Do we force them to be culled? How do we handle this? And so I think until we get a clear direction on how the dairy industry is going to be dealing or forced to deal with this, it's hard to know exactly what does it mean for the cattle, you know, the beef side of the business. What does it mean for the, you know, for the milk side of the business? And I think right now what we saw was we saw this big knockdown in milk on worries that consumers might pull back. We might get some reversion to it. And now we're seeing the price bounce a little bit, thinking, well, you know, we're going to lose a lot of production here. You know, maybe we overplayed what the demand side might be. We underplayed the loss of production. So I still think it's going to be a bouncing ball here for probably another 30 days before we can get our hands around exactly what does this mean for all the different constituencies in livestock.
Well, and it's nice to know that that even though those rumor chasings continue, consumers are looking at the science behind all of this and knowing that it's not in the food chain, the milk is safe to drink, because dairy producers take that side very, very seriously.
There's no incentive for a dairy producer to do anything but absolutely make sure that everything that he does with his milk produces safe milk. And we know to the extent that anyone might be worried, pasteurization can, you know, is how we do things. And we could even increase the degree of pasteurization if we felt we needed it to put a little extra factor of safety, which all the work that I see from science says really pretty much takes the risk of eating and drinking dairy products off the table for risk to consumers. I hope, you know, that's the story that the consumer takes away from, and we don't see this backing away from demand. You know, they've been able to override this in poultry, for example. They don't seem to pull back from chicken consumption anymore. I hope the same thing goes on, happens here with dairy.
All right, let's look at this hog market. Can this excitement continue to see these highs happening within this hog trade?
Well, what's interesting, you know, is that I think a lot of the negativity that's been going on in, you know, cattle prices, and to some extent dairy prices, I think the market is saying, well, a winner here could be pork demand, right? So if you say, look, you know, I'm a little worried, you know, about high priced beef. I'm a little worried about avian issues, and I got a bunch of cheap pork supplies that right now, at least in the U.S., we don't have to worry about any disease risks. You know, why don't we just consume a little bit more of that? And it just seems to me, if you look at the pork cutout price, the cash price for pork, we're really starting to see demand starting to take off here, especially since this avian flu really came about. And so, you know, there's always a winner and a loser in every situation. Right now, it looks like the pork industry, the hog industry, is the winner so far in this entire avian flu drama.
All right. What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you, Sean?
Well, the two best ways is our Twitter page, at Ferritix11, or they can go to our website, hackettadvisors.com, H-A-C-K-E-T-T, advisors with an S. To stay in touch with what we're doing and how we look at the world, to see what we're doing is of some value to those that listen and watch your show.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Sean Hackett, joining us today. Of course, the Channel Final Bell is brought to you by Channel Seed and the local Channel Seed professional right here on the Rural Radio Network.